let's look at different components of identity real quickly. There's you, there's my, the carbon-based unit with my DNA. I like to think there's some uniqueness there and I can identify it. I have an identity at my bank. I have an identity at work. I have an identity at home. I have an identity with my family. I have an identity in social media. Shall I go on?
Welcome to Embracing Digital Transformation, where we investigate effective change leveraging people, process, and technology.
This is Darren Pulsford, Chief Solution Architect, author, and most importantly, your host.
On today's episode, Understanding Identity with special guest Jeff Rich, Executive Director of the Identity Defined Security Alliance. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, you know, we talked just briefly last week and you wanted to tell me all about what you do. And I said, whoa, wait, we need to wait for the show because I want it to be fresh and new. So Jeff, tell my audience a little bit about your background, who you are, and what you're doing here today. How's that sound?
Sure. I'm always happy to talk about myself. Thanks. My name is Jeff Rich. I started off my degrees in physics. I taught astronomy in a planetarium. I'm not going to go to this level of detail for everything, but that's one of those unique things. Now you know someone that did, because chances are you didn't before.
No, I've never met anyone that has done that. So.
And that was, let's just say, five-ish more decades ago. So started doing that, did some work with local law enforcement, and then changed around 45 years ago into what was then called data security, and then became information security, computer security, risk management, cyber, and all the names that have come since then. I started the security programs at places like Dell Computer, Rackspace Hosting, and a few financial services firms. Worked as director of operations at a research center at a university. So I've tried a bunch of different things. And for the past year or so, I've been involved leading the Identity Defined Security Alliance. And we are focused on identity and the security of identity and what that means, both to the ecosystem, to general infrastructure, and ultimately to the consumer, because in many cases, that's where identity leads. But I think you know as well as I do, that's not all cases.
Yeah, no, it's not. And this fits really well into the series I've been running on the podcast on zero trust architecture, because one of the key pillars is identity.
Number one.
Just one, run of the six. So it's fascinating to me that there's this whole identity-defined security alliance. I mean, when I think of identity, and most people think of identity, they think, well, yeah, identity is easy, right? I log in, I have multi-factor authentication. It knows it's me. I'm a person. That's what identity is. But that's not what identity is it?
Well, it is. If I looked at the whole world of identity, that is a little part of it.
Yeah.
But it is not all of it. And the best way to help frame that answer is, have you or anyone you know and have their identity compromised or stolen? And
yeah.
The answer is going to be yes, of course it is. All right, there. We just define different parts of identity. Let's look at different components of identity real quickly. There's you. There's the carbon-based unit with my DNA. I like to think there's some uniqueness there and I can identify it. I have an identity at my bank. I have an identity at work. I have an identity at home. I have an identity with my family. I have an identity in social media. Shall I go on?
Yeah, no, that brings up an interesting point. Do you think because of the internet and the social media and all that, that our identities have multiplied in several ways? Because before the internet craze in the 90s, how were we uniquely identified? A couple ways, right?
Driver's license.
A driver's license, a social security number. Maybe
thumbprint,
and that was
still physical.
I learned how to
roll prints with ink. and the list pretty much ends then. If you were in the military, you had a what was a precursor to the CAC before. So yeah, and that list just about ends at that point. And that was your identity.
And so with the booming of the internet in the late 90s, because I've done this, I have so many pseudo identities out there on the internet. People can now take on multiple identities, some that are themselves or some that are pseudonyms for themselves, or some people are just creating fake identities all the time. I guess they did that, you know, when I was in high school. So you could pay a guy to give you a fake driver's license so you can get into a bar or something, right? I mean, that was going on. But now it's so much easier to take on multiple identities in the internet world. It's what's a real identity then?
So a real identity is, it's all contextual. A real identity to you is any identity that matches a criteria that you set up for either vetting or authentication or authorization. So if we are having a chat, you are willing to accept the fact that I'm Jeff Rich. And we've done some vetting with a
little bit. Yeah, we did. Am I really sure that you're Jeff Rich? I don't really know.
Yeah, you don't really know that. That's my point. You don't even know if I'm a deep fake or not. I'd like to think I'm a really good one if I am.
You're a really good deep fake if you are one.
But you don't even really know that. But that's okay, because for the purposes of this discussion, you're not worried about, gee, is this someone that's, you know, what would happen if it really wasn't Jeff Rich? Well, you may get better or worse information depending on who it is. But beyond that, you suffer no harm.
No, that's true.
However, if I'm a surgeon about to operate on you, boy, your level of I want to really know who you are and what your credentials are zooms right up.
It does. You're right. It does. I never thought of it that way, right? So it is totally contextual on how important identity is to us.
Yeah. So it's what's the use and what's the cost? You know, what's it going to, you don't want to spend a whole lot of money just to say hello to someone necessarily.
Right.
Now that, and we're not even done with the list, but all we're talking about me, which it's, I'll do all day, but we're talking about me and my identity and your identity. We haven't even talked about all the other identities that are out there that we know we're going to end up spending maybe even the majority of this discussion going into. And that's everything else that's non-human based.
Whoa, wait. All right. So you're saying that because traditionally when we think of identity, it's tied to a carbon-based human, right? It's tied to someone that has, I'm logging in, there's a person behind it. But what you're saying is there's identity of other things out there that are not human. And you're not talking pets either. You're talking like, you know, virtual things and things in that aren't alive, right?
You know, that is where I was going, but now that you mention it, pets can be in that category too. You know,
yeah, they can.
In a home, and you know, when you're away, there are devices where a pet pushes a button and they get food. So,
I'm planning on. I've got a beta fish. He's the kind of mascot of the show, so he's got an identity because he has his own YouTube stream now. You can watch him live doing nothing because fish don't do anything except swim around. But he now has an identity, and there's been plenty of brand new deep fakes, social media deep fakes that now have identity as well, right?
Yes. So anytime you want to validate his identity, you could call that a beta test, by the way.
I love it.
Sorry.
No, it was that there. Was an easy one. Jeff, you're great, man.
But if you have a smartphone, and I'm willing to bet you do,
yeah,
there are multiple identities buried in that phone that at most may be associated with you as a user, but they aren't you. Because if they were, when you got rid of your phone, why does that identity continue to go with it? Why was the address of the device within that phone with the phone instead of stay with you? So it's not you.
I see that now. So my device, my smartphone, has its own identity. It could be unique, a unique MAC address, or a model or a serial number that uniquely identifies that device. I see that.
Exactly. That expands to, so let's see what that universe looks like. Cars. If your car is less than 10 years old, it probably has its own identity. that you might not even be aware of. But all the nice features that say, you know, if your airbags deflate, we're automatically going to call. That's not you. That's the car's identity making that happen. It may use your phone, but it's still the car's identity. When there's a problem that needs to be diagnosed, when the diagnostic component's plugged into the car, the first thing it does is say, what's the identity of the car and all the different components so that I can set my baseline to determine are things working correctly.
That's a good one, because now we're seeing identity in that context that now when I put that probe in there, it needs to know what kind of car it is. It needs to know its components so it can tell me what's really going on with the car. So identity is not just used for security, but identity also sets context as well.
Yes, and it has to be used within context. And so it has to be used out of context, identity is meaningless. You know, I'm Fred, I'm Bob, I'm Elaine. It doesn't matter because out of context, it makes no difference.
Very, very, very fascinating. So how does that work in the virtual world, in the world of software, and where, because normally when I think of identity, I'm thinking of identity of an entity, like a car or a human, but software, I have multiple copies of the same software all over the place. Does each copy get its own identity, or is it just the version of that software that's its identity? How does that all work?
So that depends. You know, not every bit of software has an identity. It'll have components. It's something that's recognizable, but you could have identical copies, and the root of the word identical obviously comes from the same place, and it won't have any effect because the context expects software and nothing else. However, if you want to say, I have a licensed version of this software and making an identical copy of it won't work, that would be because it has some sort of digital rights management or whatever it's called by the vendor that says, here's the identity of the software. Here's when it was created. Here's when it was compiled. Here's when that was locked in. Here's whether it's as simple as a checksum or a digital signature that has to
like a hash get or something,
the other part of the certificate. Yeah. So you can have identity with software. It makes perfect sense.
Now, what popped into my mind is a strange thing that popped into my mind, which was we had this concept of NFTs, non-fungible tokens, right? So that I could have unique like images or audio or video files that did now have a full-blown identity, could not be copied, right? Where now they actually exist in a non-fungible way, where software is more fungible, right? And things like that. So do you see us moving more towards things more like that so that I can uniquely identify, you know, things out there? And would they be more secure if I could uniquely identify even copies of the same software? Or does it even matter?
So there's a couple questions in there. To answer the first one, yes, I do think that's where we're headed. I don't think that's such our next step, because I think there's a lot of stepping stones we need to go over before that'll happen. But you brought up a good thing with a good topic with NFTs, because the whole point of NFTs was to say there's an inherent value in it. And I'm not here to debate that, but there's an inherent value, and that has to be associated with the one that I have. That one that I have has to be identified with an identity. It has to be identified. Otherwise, it has no value.
It has no value. Yeah, that makes sense.
Really good example of that. Now, it is a commodity, so the value is going to be determined by a whole bunch of other things, but the identity doesn't change. Now, I do think we are headed towards having more and more hardware and software components that do have unique, somewhat secure, and I have to say it that way, identities. Because anything you do, any steps you take to secure anything, there are processes that are built by humans, and there's other humans over time that have other tools and maybe smarter that can decompose that.
So we actually ran into that problem with SolarWinds, right? SolarWinds security software to help me with my security, my network security. A hacker got in and built into their software because they hacked around. It was a phishing attack. There's a whole story on that. So in that case, they were shipping out security software with a security hole in it. And no one
and it was certified.
Yeah, and certified. Yeah. It says, I trust this, right? Yeah, that's a good point.
So, now I'm not here to bash SolarWinds because, you know, all it would take is a half of a breath for me to be in that position. And I have been to a degree, but not to that scale. So I'm not here to bash them. But that's
no, not at all. Not at all. I mean, it was a very sophisticated attack and very patient. And it could happen to anyone. Absolutely.
And the root of it was social engineering, which was a way for one individual to convince another individual to compromise their identity.
See, you're right. This all went back to identity. Boy, Jeff, you're smart. That's why you're the executive director of identity. Right? I mean, that makes sense.
Well, it's where my focus is, without question.
Yeah.
Nothing. There's a reason that identity is the first pillar of zero trust. You can't get there without knowing who you're dealing with or what you're dealing with all of the time. And in zero trust, it is all of the time. You never have a point where you say, well, I did that.
I it's trust no one. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You're right. So how do you see identity changing? Because right now when we think of identity as a username and a password, and we've moved on to maybe multi-factor authentication. So a token of some sort that I know, do you see that continually to grow and become more complex, or do you see it simplifying over time on how I truly identify an individual or software or hardware out there in this ecosystem that we have?
I envision that it's going to become more simple for the users to use because the systems that support it will become more complex. And if I can, if you make everything simple, which would be great, to me, life should be simple, right? However, if everything is simple enough, then all it takes is one social engineering effort to be successful for it to break. So there has to be a level of complexity, at least in the back end, to say you can't simply open one door and get in. Even if you get into one door, I'm going to make you go through another. This is a zero trust concept. And I'm going to make it have to go north. So before you get to the core, you will have had to go through a whole bunch of gates and satisfied each one uniquely, not the same password to get through each one.
To get to.
So more complex back end to make it more simple to use.
Okay. So, I've got a great example for this. My wife, just last night, she can't watch these horrible Dateline shows anymore because someone's always dying. But she goes, what if you died? How would I know what all the passwords are to all of our bank accounts, all of our, financial things and bills and, all the services that we have? And I said, well, the password's the same for all of them, which is stupid for me to do, right? Or do I use a password vault or do I come up with my own algorithm and say, well, here's the algorithm, apply the algorithm when you're getting into every single account that we have. How does anyone get, I mean, that's complex. That's crazy for me to do. But so the simple thing for me to do is use the same password everywhere, which is dumb, right? Because that's vulnerable.
That's simple everywhere that I was talking about, that one break breaks everything.
Yeah, exactly. So what's the answer to a neophyte like me? Don't know much about identity. What do I do? What do I do about this?
So first of all, before you call yourself a neophyte, if you do come up with your own algorithm to be used for every single situation, you could fill in that one spot back behind you that doesn't have a patent.
That's right. I could get a new patent for that. Yeah, you're right.
but I think the simple answer to this is, I think what we're going to have to do about now is really two things. As much as a lot of people don't want to hear this, at some point, governmental agencies have to be involved, only because everyone needs some authoritative source that they can trust. Once again, I'm not getting into a political debate, but everyone needs an authoritative source they can trust where everyone can use the same one. Now, I happen to be involved in another nonprofit called CD Hub that deals with sustainability and interoperability with IDs. And one of the goals of that is to not necessarily develop standards, but come up with where we think the gaps are and what standards really need to do and influence some standard bodies and governments to accept them, to say that if you're going to have a digital wallet, which is going to contain some of your credentials and your IDs and everything else, here's the minimum components that you should have before I'm willing to accept it.
Gotcha. So we kind of already have a little bit of this already happening though, right? Because Google did it, Apple's done it, Facebook has done it, Microsoft has done it, where I can use their authentication services to authenticate who I am. So right, I only have one thing, right?
Right. You're using federated identity that way.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that's different from what I suggested is, and this is why I said it, at some point, a governmental agency has to be involved, because Microsoft will say, well, I'm sure you use Google authentication, but I'm Microsoft, so I don't want to accept it. And the same will hold true in reverse, by the way.
I understand that. Yeah, because they're competitors, and you know, why would I do that?
My technology is better. But when there is what on the surface should be an disinterested objective party saying, here is the minimum standards I look for to vet someone to say I can authenticate their identity. And if I'm willing to accept those levels of criterion, then I should be able to say, then when you say that you're Darren, I'll accept it.
Right.
And no, I don't care what company you're with, because it is a third party.
It's a third party. So it doesn't necessarily have to be government. It just has to be a third party disinterested entity that cares, because that's what we've done with the internet with DNS.
I can. It's supposed to be that.
Supposed to be.
but I say it that way because of what it's turned into, unfortunately. I mean, it still does a wonderful job. We wouldn't be talking if it didn't work.
Right. Yeah.
But it is there's a level of trust that has to be there that in some cases is beginning to erode. Now that may happen with governments as well, but the thing with governments is they're already kind of doing it. If you have a passport,
you're right.
Any other country that's willing to accept the credential standards that the U.S. uses to issue a passport will accept your passport.
It would still be a federated way of doing things because each entity would have to trust the other entity, and there'd be some commonality between that trust. Reciprocity. That's the word I'm looking for today.
Oh, yeah. And that is how it works right now. Now governments can have issues, and that's when wars happen, right? Or tariffs or whatever else is going to be there. But you're more likely to have a dependable, consistent source with government to government than you are with company to company, because there's an acquisition, or there's a new technology, or they just did an update, which took everyone else, you know, all those
things.
Which
took everyone out, yes. That is true. Do you ever see us moving even away from having a third-party authentication and using biometrics of some sort to uniquely identify someone?
So I'll challenge you. That's a great idea. The potential, what needs to be solved with that is if I could say, here's a sample of my blood chemistry and fingerprints. How do you know those are mine?
Someone has to authenticate that in the first place. You're right.
You have to have someone that you trust to say, yes, that matches what I have on file for him.
Yeah. So you need an attestation organization. I attest to you. Well, so let's take the human part of that and move it to now software and hardware. It's the same problem. I need to attest that I trust something out there. Right now, can I run my own attestation services? Is that sufficient enough? But maybe it's not. How does identity work with, you know, hardware that I'm getting? How do I know it has been tampered with? Or software, how do I know that it matches with what the whoever produced it, that it hasn't changed since they produced it. It's the same problem, right?
It's the exact same challenge. And it's just now it's not carbon based, it's silicon based. So right. that's really the only difference. And it doesn't, well, it actually does consume oxygen, but let's not get into all of the physics behind it. But, so yeah, how are we going to do that? That is the big question in front of us right now. I wish I could say, oh, here's how it's going to happen. I can't say for certain what the next steps are going to be. However, what I can say is that you're going to have to see more and more cooperation, integration, and interoperability so that organizations that are going to say, hey, this is my chip, I made it, and I can attest to the fact that nothing else is compromised other than what I've documented is in there. Any organization that does that is going to have to work with others. Otherwise, they're a silo on their own, and it won't sustain. That's why sustainable is in the first word in that CD Hub organization.
See, that makes now sustain, because anytime I hear the word sustainability, I go, oh, they're going to talk about environment and things like, you're talking like true sustainability across the board, right? Which I appreciate that expanded definition, because I think that means a lot more, right? How do I keep things going? Where do you see moving in the future, your organization's role in all of this? Is it to define the standards, or is it to create collaboration between organizations? Where do you guys see your primary role?
Well, you're giving me a good segue into something I want to talk about as well. We don't look at ourselves as defining standards. We're not a standards body. There are good standards bodies out there, and we work with many of them. I can't say all, because there's a lot there, whether it's NIST or what you get out of the EU or anything else. There are a lot of good ones out there. But there are times where we feel we should be in a position to, through collaboration of our members, whether it's an identity vendor or an identity consumer, to come up with a common voice that's going to maybe influence what that standard might need to be doing if it's not doing it yet. I don't think I see us going further than that, as you know, never becoming a standard body. Once a year, in the second Tuesday of every April, we have Identity Management Day, which covers, at a minimum, all the things we talked about and then some. And it's good timing because the 2024 version of Identity Management Day is happening on April 9th. And I am going to talk about it a bit, if you don't mind. We co-host that with the National Cybersecurity Alliance, and they've been our co-host since the beginning. This is our fourth iteration of it. It's co-chaired by Savient, which is an identity and security vendor. This year, different from the previous years, we have made it Identity Management Day around the world. We have an event starting in Melbourne, Australia, on Tuesday the 9th there. We will then move through Europe with a session with sessions hosted out of Paris. Melbourne is in person and online, and the rest is all online, coming out of Paris and covering the EMEA region. And then we will close the day in the Americas on April 9th. We have a number of sponsors. I won't go through all of them here. If you go to our website, which I'm sure you're going to get an opportunity to talk about, you can find all about the event, our sponsors. It's free. And you could go to all 21 hours should you want. I'm not sure I'm going to be awake for all 21 hours.
So the big question is, where are you going to be? Are you going to be in Melbourne?
You know, that's going to be up for you to determine. You're going to have to identify where I am.
Oh! This sounds like a great... So the purpose of this day is education and awareness. Is that the idea?
Absolutely. Not only do we want to raise awareness, we want to get the right parties together, and we want to get information in the heads of the people that need it. So as an example, our keynote speaker is Caleb Sima. He's a founder of a few companies, been the CISO for a few large organizations. And he is currently the chair of the Cloud Security Alliance, AI Security Alliance. Fits in with what we've been talking about. He's going to talk about what role AI plays in creating identity, validating identity, and defending identity. And that's something people don't think about a lot with AI.
Yeah, how do I defend my identity, right? Because identity theft is a big deal. Not just human identity theft, but also device identity theft. People don't think of that. And software identity theft, right?
If you can identify your hard drive, and that's where your NFT is, you want to make sure that you not only is it identified correctly, but you still have it and you're controlling it.
That's very true. There's a lot to unpack with that statement.
Right. Or your cryptocurrency wallet. So.
Yeah. There's lots of things tied into that. Not just financial. It could be lots of other things.
Yeah. And we didn't talk about it yet. And I don't want to go into depth, but at some point I think you're going to see blockchain playing a significant role in identity going forward as well.
Yeah, I think so too. Once the hype cycle's over and people can start really seeing the benefits of secure ledgers and secure distributed ledgers, I think you're right. I think there'll be a big play there. Right now, though, it just has a lot of people worried. They don't know what to do with it.
It's new technology.
It's new, yeah.
I remember when client server or PCs, people felt the same way.
And so we got so many new technologies, Gen AI, blockchain, all this stuff is all converging into a big brew of digital mess that will untangle itself and will come out on the other end.
Yeah, well, this is our internal combustion engine. It's that revolution.
Oh, I totally agree. All right, Jeff, if people want to find out more about the Alliance, what's the website they go to?
So our website is idsalliance.org. IDSalliance is one word.
Alliance.org.
And you can get to the Identity Management Day website from that, or you can go right to identitymanagementday.org as well. That'll take you right to the website for the event. It's free. We're going to have prizes as well, gamification through it. A lot of good sessions. I can't encourage anyone enough that if you have any interest in identity or you think you might want to have an interest in identity, this is the right way to spend April 9th.
Hey, Jeff, thanks so much for coming on the show. I've learned a whole lot today and how it fits into zero trust architecture. It's the number one pillar. Got to have identity first. I love it. Thanks again for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Embracing Digital Transformation today. If you enjoyed our podcast, give it 5 stars on your favorite podcasting site or YouTube channel. You can find out more information about Embracing Digital Transformation at embracingdigital.org. Until next time, go out and embrace the digital revolution.